It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Every single member of this institution, Democratic and Republican, should join us in condemning the president's racist tweets. To do anything less would be a shocking rejection of our values and a shameful abdication of our oath of office to protect the American people.
I was just going to give the General Speaker of the House if she would like to rephrase that comment.
I have cleared my remarks with the parliamentarian before I read them.
I made a point of order that the gentlewoman's armed parliamentarian and request they be taken down.
But we don't ever want to pass up, it seems, an opportunity to escalate. And that's what this is. I'll dare anybody to look at any of the footage and see if there was any unfairness. But unfairness is not enough because we want to just fight. I abandon the chair.
Wow, that was a dramatic moment in the House last night. In case you don't know, this morning they did pass the resolution condemning President Donald Trump by 240-187. Only 5 Republicans voted with the Democrats, and the president's very happy about that. And the story there, though, is a story within a story, and that is that Nancy Pelosi actually broke House rules when she called the president of the United States a racist on the House floor. That is a longstanding rule in the House that you out of respect, you don't do that. Liz Cheney addressed it last night. Let's listen to what Congresswoman Liz Cheney had to say.
You've had Democratic leadership completely unwilling to condemn their own members, particularly for really vile anti-Semitic remarks. And then today you watched as Nancy Pelosi showed total, utter contempt, disregard for what is really the heart of our constitutional republic, for the floor of the House of Representatives. She violated the rules. She stormed off the floor. She refused to come back. You know, she's acting as though she thinks this is Nancy Pelosi's house when it is the people's house. And it's really important for us to focus on what they stand for. And what they stand for is a socialist agenda that would be devastating for this nation.
Well, of course, she hinted and alluded to the fact that this is a breaking of longstanding rules in the House. And that is, and so Nancy was called up on that by Doug Collins. You heard him. He's the chairman of the he's the ranking member of the Judiciary Committee in the House. And so he calls her out and says, you need to take that back. It was interesting last night. So the Republicans then call for a resolution, the resolution that she presented to be removed because of her comments. The Democrats, of course, voted against that measure, and then it went to a vote. It was 240-187, which was a pretty partisan vote along partisan lines, except for those 5 Republicans. And you know what? You guys find out who those were because I can't rattle them off. I can remember a few of them, but I don't want to stumble on that. So I'll tell you who they were. Okay, now here's what started this. I mean, I think you know that, but we had these 4 members of the House of Representatives who are claiming that the president is racist because he came after them for the many racist, anti-American things that they've said. He talked about how if you're so unhappy, go back to your country. Well, that's another, you know, inexact. President Trump is not into minutia of conversation. He isn't. But it's true that certainly in the case of Ilhan Omar, she is a refugee from Somalia. We think that she married her brother to get into this country, to become a citizen. We have Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and of course she's an American citizen born in New York, but she's of Puerto Rican descent, and Puerto Rico is in a mess. And if she and her family are, Puerto Rico is part of America, but the governance of the island is just a mess. You know, they went through that hurricane. They're having rebellion in the streets right now to the governor of Puerto Rico for whatever reasons I can't take time to explain right now. But It is true. And then, of course, you've got Rashida Tlaib, who is a Palestinian descent, who's no doubt has loyalties to Palestine over America. We know that by her statements. And so even though his words were not exact, he was right on the facts. He was right on the heart of it. And of course, he's being accused of a racist. And you had statements like from various congressmen last night before the vote. Hakeem Jeffries said this.
We are a nation of immigrants, some voluntary, others involuntary. But as Dr. King once observed, we may have come over on different ships, but we're all in the same boat now. We're a gorgeous mosaic of people from throughout the world. We are white, we are black, we are Latino, we are Asian, we are Native American. We are Christian, we are Jewish, we are Muslim, we are Hindu. We are believers, we are non-believers. We are gay, we are straight. We are young, we are older. We are women, we are men.
Okay, you get the point. So he's saying, we are a diverse nation. He's right about that. But this is the part that Hakeem does not say. President Trump and the rest of us who agree with him and his sentiment is not talking about their color. He's not talking about an incontrovertible characteristic that they have or a choice of religion. He's not talking about that. He's talking about the fact that they hate this country. They work against it. They say terrible things. They are socialist communists. You notice Hakeem doesn't have that in his list. He doesn't say, we are communists, we are socialists. He doesn't say that. But that really is the issue. And of course, John Lewis jumps in and wants black Americans to believe this is all about the plight of black Americans. Let's listen to John.
In the 50s and during the 60s, segregationists told us to go back when we protested for our rights. They told ministers, priests, rabbis, and nuns to go back. They told the innocent little children seeking just an equal education to go back.
All right, I'm going to interrupt him too because you get the gist of it. It's all emotion. That's not the same thing as having communists who have infiltrated your Congress and are trying to undermine and destroy the country, who happen to be of different ethnic origins other than white. That's an aside, and yet they, of course, want to. That's what they want to center on. But I want you to kind of review with me what these various women in Congress have said. I think it bears repeating. I want you to know, for one thing, we know that the guy that was killed in Tacoma, Washington, over the weekend, was a member of Antifa. He's the guy that tried to firebomb an ICE facility. He had a rifle, and he was going to kill people. And he wrote a manifesto, and he was part of Antifa. His picture is seen, I've seen it at least twice, in the latest Antifa dust-ups in the Northwest. We know who he is. We know what he did. His best friend said he was an anti-fascist. She says, of course, he was a fascist. That's what Antifa is. They are fascists. They're no different than the brown shirts, the Nazi brown shirts. Nevertheless, they as is happening right now, whatever they say is not really true. It's the opposite. We're in an opposite world. So he was killed because he tried to kill people at the ICE facility. And he wrote a manifesto that you've not heard about, right? A manifesto about who he is and what he was trying to do. But you're not going to hear about that. So the Rebel is an outlet. I don't know much about them. I just know of their work. And so they confronted each of these women, three of them at least, on the question about whether they condemned what Antifa did over the weekend, whether they condemned this guy trying to bomb this ICE facility. And it will be no surprise to you that each of them refused to say a word. They were asked if they would at least condemn the violence. They were asked over and over again. You see it in videos. I'm not going to play it because they don't really respond, but they were asked really pointed questions. They were asked if they would condemn the Antifa firebomber, if they felt partly responsible. And one of the reporters from Rebel said that when Ilhan Omar, who had refused to answer him, and he was asking really great questions. I watched the exchange. She just ignored him. But when she got into the van, she burst out laughing. Yeah, so this is what this is what we're up against. The reporter said, can you respond from Rebel? Can you respond to the president's claims that you're a communist and you're pro-Al-Qaeda? And, of course, I want you to hear that clip. I think we have that entire clip. We played part of it yesterday, but I want you to hear it again. This is why the president is responding the way he is. This is Ilhan Omar, clip 8.
Can you respond to some of the president's specific claims, most notably that you're a communist and that you're pro-Al-Qaeda?
You might have noticed how when he said, go back to where you came from, there was an uproar through the through all of our communities, because every single person who's brown and black at some point in their life in this country heard that. Now, when he made the comment, I know that every single Muslim who has lived in this country and across the world has heard that comment. And so I will not dignify it with an answer.
All right, I'm going to interject right there. So you see what she's saying. It's all, again, she's smart, and she is prepared for this moment, as I described to you yesterday. No, we're brown and black. That's why the president hates us. It has nothing to do with us being communists who are sympathetic to terrorists. Nothing to do with that whatsoever. I wish I had the time to go through the list. I'll try to. Ilhan Omar has said in the past that Israel has hypnotized the world. May Allah awaken the people and help them to see the evil doings of Israel. She blamed America for the crisis in Venezuela. She attacked American soldiers for the Black Hawk Down mission in Somalia. Rashida Tlaib said thinking of the Holocaust provides her with a calming feeling. She called critics of her Holocaust distortion racist idiots. She associates with terrorists. We've talked about that before. She supports that boycott movement of Israel. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez said the current state of America is garbage, that the United States is running concentration camps on the southern border, that illegal immigrants are more American than any person who seeks to keep them out or ever will be. She has refused to condemn socialist Venezuelan dictator Nicolas Maduro. She has defended Ilhan Omar's disgusting 9/11 comments. I could go on and on about this, about what they have said, and that's why the president is responding the way he is. Let me read what the president is saying now. When will the radical left congresswomen apologize to our country, the people of Israel, and even to the office of the president for the foul language they have used and the terrible things they have said? In fact, let's just drop in clip 20. That's this Rashida Tlaib right after she was sworn into office.
And when your son looks at you and says, Mama, look, you won, bullies don't win. And I said, baby, they don't, because we're going to go in there, we're going to impeach the mother.
Right, so there you go. That's Rashida Tlaib. So the president says, when will they apologize for the foul language they have used and the terrible things they have said? So many people are angry at them and their horrible and disgusting actions. If Democrats want to unite around the foul language and racist hatred spewed from the mouths and actions of these very unpopular and unrepresentative congresswomen, it will be interesting to see how it plays out. I can tell you that they have made Israel feel abandoned by the U.S. And then he goes on to say, we all know that AOC and this crowd are a bunch of communists. They hate Israel. They hate our own country. They're calling the guards along our border concentration camp guards. They accuse people who support Israel as doing it for the Benjamins. They're anti-Semitic. They are anti-America, and we don't need to know anything about them personally. Talk about their policies. I think they are American citizens who are duly elected that are running on an agenda that is disgusting, that the American people will reject. And so he goes on in his tweet, but you get the message. I think probably we'll open the phone lines tomorrow, and I would love to hear what you think about all of this. But that's why the resolution was passed last night, because President Trump has dared to criticize these four women of color. And it's all about their color. It has nothing to do with the horrendous things they have said and done. Really? That's what they want us to believe. And unfortunately, I think millions of Americans who have the benefit of watching networks that are happy to repeat the spin and not tell the truth are believing. So we have to do our part to sort this thing out and make sure the truth is known. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
It is a horrible scenario, but it happens. Dennis writes about his wife. She was diagnosed with leukemia. In fact, she's a two-time survivor. And in the midst of all that, they ran up over $1 million in medical bills. thankfully, they're Medishare members. And Dennis says they are so thankful for that, how others came together to meet their needs. And that's how so many Medishare members feel. This is not health insurance. It's different. You don't have to pay for things you don't believe in. And like Dennis found out, it just works. So if you join Medishare, not only do you save a lot of money, the typical family saves about $500 a month, but you know where your money's going each month. You're helping people. And if the time should come, they'll be helping and even praying for you. So yes, it's different. And as more than 400,000 people now know, when it comes to healthcare costs, different is beautiful. Find out more. Call 833-44-BIBLE. That's 833-44-BIBLE. 833-44-BIBLE.
This is Pause to Pray, a moment to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today, we pray for Dr. Chris Fall, Director of the Department of Energy's Office of Science. The office is the primary funder of physical sciences research in the United States. Nehemiah 9:6 reminds us that all the good works and wonders of our world are God's creation. You alone are the Lord. You made the heavens, even the highest heavens, and all their starry host, the earth and all that is on it, the seas and all that is in them. You give life to everything, and the multitudes of heaven worship you. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask you to give wisdom to Dr. Chris Fall as he leads the Office of Science. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team, a nonprofit, nonpartisan ministry dedicated to encouraging prayer for our nation's leaders. To learn more, go to pausetopray.org.
Fox News Commentary with Todd Starnes.
A flag unfurled, but it's not American. That story coming up.
What do you see for the next generation? Do you see a prospering nation? Do you see hope? The future is ours to create, and Liberty University is driven to train positive influencers for our country and our culture. Our mission is to guide students toward leadership as servants of the people, defenders of freedom, and champions of truth. Discover how you can impact the next generation of champions for Christ at liberty.edu/starnes.
A terrible thing happened the other day in Aurora, Colorado. A mob of anti-American protesters took down the American flag and then raised the Mexican flag. It happened outside a detention center holding illegal aliens. The Denver Channel reports about 2,000 protesters had gathered, including some illegals. The protesters also raised a desecrated version of the Blue Lives Matter flag, defaced with anti-police messages. What a shameful thing. And not a single person was arrested. The police call it a peaceful protest, but there's really nothing peaceful about desecrating Old Glory. What I'm about to say is politically incorrect, but it needs to be said. We've been invaded. Our national sovereignty has been compromised. And unless our elected leaders get serious about securing that border, one day they'll be raising the Mexican flag over the U.S. Capitol. I'm Todd Starnes.
That's your Fox News commentary.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
It's up to them. They can do what they want. They can leave, they can stay, but they should love our country and they should work for the good of our country.
He tells us that I should go back to the great borough of the Bronx and make it better. And that's what I'm here to do.
They blame America for so much of the trouble in the world. That's deeply troubling.
He's called on us to go back and fight corruption and fight these countries that have worst leaders and inept leaders. Well, we are living in one. He is that president.
All right, so there you go. That's a little bit more information about this dust-up in the Congress last night and some background on why it happened. The Congress voted last night 240, at least the House, 240 to 187 to condemn the president for his tweets against those four freshman congressmen. And just so you know, there were four Republicans who voted for the resolution. They were Susan Brooks of Indiana, Brian Fitzpatrick of Pennsylvania, Will Heard of Texas, and Fred Upton of Michigan. So that's how it came down. I've asked Daniel Horowitz to join us this morning. Daniel is a senior editor for Conservative Review, good friend, and really one of the most prolific writers in D.C., honestly, on all things related to Congress, for sure, and lots of other things. So, Daniel, I know you were watching last night, and before we jump into a discussion about the budget, I really want to know what you think about what happened last night.
You know, what I think about what happened last night is that we have a party that, as demonic as their beliefs are, they believe in their beliefs. They believe in their party's platform. You got to give it to the Democrats. I mean, they are willing to take it to the mat. So basically what happened was Nancy Pelosi directly called the president a racist. And normally on the House floor, you're not allowed to directly attack someone's personality. It's part of House Rule 17. You can't call them directly a liar or something like that, an ad hominem. And it was clearly out of order. The Democrat chair at that point, you know, everyone has chair duty. They preside over the House, even though officially the Speaker does, but there's usually someone in her place because she was speaking on the floor. And that was Emanuel Cleaver, and he just said, "I vacate the chair," because he didn't want to rule on it. Eventually, the parliamentarian, of course, ruled it was out of order. Now, typically, the consequence of that is you lose your speaking privileges for that day, for the remainder of the day. Instead, but ultimately, the majority party controls any vote on that. So Democrats voted to restore her speaking privileges, and they voted to not strike her comments from the record. So the point is, they all circled the wagons around her. They will take the fight to the gates of hell when it comes to a tweet. But Republicans who control the Senate will not vote on a resolution to condemn the ICE attempted assassination, the attempted assassination on ICE in Tacoma, Washington. They will not vote to condemn the desecrating of our flag in Aurora, Colorado at that ICE facility. They will not vote on a single piece of legislation to go after sanctuary cities violating federal law. I could go on and on the imbalance in politics. We have one party in America that believes in their platform, and another party that's just a bunch of balloons in the wind.
Well, that's a great transition for what we're going to talk about. And before you joined us, we talked a great deal about what happened last night, Daniel, but I did want to note you filled in a lot of blanks that were good. So what I didn't know that you just said is the Senate actually, someone proposed something to vote on a resolution, a statement against the Antifa would-be killer in Tacoma, Washington over the weekend. They refused to vote on that? Or it, what happened?
No, I'm sorry. No, it wasn't even proposed. No. No one would ever think to propose that. No, there's no leadership in the Senate at all. I'm just telling you that, Sandy. In the House, there's a couple of members like Chip Roy and Andy Biggs that have been fighting for sovereignty. The other side of this issue, which is frankly where the silent majority of Americans are, in the Senate, I can't find any leadership, no.
Yeah, well, we're going to talk. You know, that's not a surprise to me. And so we're going to talk about that today. And, Daniel, actually, before we transition to the budget, I went. Rich Edson did a great report on this last night. Let's just let him speak for a second, and then let's talk about what's happening with that. And please don't tune out, because this is so important to all of us. This could be as devastating as anything we talk about at the border. In fact, they are connected. But Rich Edson has the report. Let's listen.
New White House budget projections show the United States will add $1 trillion to the national debt this year, levels of annual federal borrowing not seen since times of economic crisis and world war, and a total national debt exceeding an unprecedented $22 trillion.
We've seen were a huge, massive, unpaid-for Republican tax cut, followed very quickly by a bipartisan massive spending increase in discretionary spending.
And now Democrats and Republicans are negotiating another budget deal. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says any agreement must match spending increases in defense.
How's everything going?
With the same boost in funding for domestic programs like health care, education, and housing. Democrats also want an additional $22 billion for veterans' health care over the next 2 years. These spending discussions are part of negotiations to raise the federal borrowing limit.
These are three major issues that I think America is looking at, and we would like to work and get the job done.
Raising the debt ceiling allows the federal government to borrow the money Congress has already decided the United States should spend. Democrats are rejecting a Republican suggestion of a short-term deal if they fail to reach a longer agreement. They're aiming for a two-year spending and debt ceiling bill, as officials warn Congress again of the consequences of refusing to address the national debt.
What will happen, I think, is we'll just spend more and more of our precious resources paying interest on debt as opposed to investing in the stuff that we really need.
A source familiar with the discussion says the House Speaker and Treasury Secretary were scheduled to speak again this afternoon, trying to reach an agreement ahead of next Friday, when the House goes into recess until after Labor Day. Brett?
All right, so that was Rich Edson of Fox News last night. Daniel Horowitz is my guest. He's the senior editor at Conservative Review, a good friend and just a reliable source for information on all things happening in the Capitol. So, Daniel, before we get into the nuts and bolts of what is actually happening, I just want to ask you a general question. How serious, in your own words, is the fact that we have $22 trillion in debt?
You know, this is a really frustrating issue that we don't realize. The problem is a lot of people have cried about this for a number of years, and we continue to go on and spend ourselves into oblivion, and no one sees anything happen. The reason for that was that until now we were able to service the debt on the cheap. Interest rates were very low for two decades. Now they're going up. And the fastest growing element of the budget is the interest on the debt itself. We are literally throwing money in the garbage. But in about 4 years, we will spend more on interest on the debt than Medicaid, which in itself has exploded beyond belief over the last 5 or so years, and a year or two after that, it's going to match military spending. It's going to reach about $1 trillion a year within a decade. It's already doubled over the last 2 years. They're slated to double at the end of this year. That is something we've never seen before. So that's the issue. The other point is this, that it's not just a futuristic problem that we're going to mortgage our children's livelihood over this. Right now, we are losing out on this. This is the best job market since World War II in many ways, or at least ties the late 90s and late 60s. Yet, every other time we've had that, we've had 4, 5, 6% growth. Growth has been decent. It's hovering around 2.9%, but it's bizarre. You could chart it on a graph from World War II. We've never had that. 3.7% unemployment, but the GDP growth is not that great. There's a reason for it. We can never, ever achieve 4 or 5% growth anymore, and that is because of the misallocation of resources. Think about all of that money going into dead weight to service nothing more than Democrat vote dependency programs rather than the best capital investment, goods and services, factories. That's the problem. It's not just a problem in the future. It is taking a bite out of the economy right now.
So, Daniel, I think probably some background on this. You know, the debt used to be a very big issue. Americans seem to understand it. In fact, as I recall, Newt Gingrich and the gang that came into power in 1996 or 94 were the Reagan Revolution, were swept into power because of the out-of-control spending. So what in your mind has changed the outrage over that? Why are Americans like yawning about this?
I don't think the Americans are yawning. I think, you know, we live in a time of mass media where every second of media is worth about a week's worth of saturation of news from the 90s. And, you know, every week or month is like a century. So people's brains are exploding with so many different things and soap operas and petty fights. And whereas even establishment Republicans used to at least officially stand for something in the 90s, nowadays we can't find anyone who stands for anything. The Republican Party is broken from head to toe. It's completely gone. A lot of people want to blame Trump for ending fiscal conservatism. But, I mean, Trump is no worse than McConnell and McCarthy and Ryan. Ryan was the first one to cast the stone against the Budget Control Act of 2011, the only successful spending cut we've had in the last decade. Trump is willing. He did put out a budget blueprint. He has a good budget director. OMB director who's willing to cut spending. But, I mean, look, if everyone in Congress wants to increase spending, I mean, the president is not going to stand in their way. I mean, we knew that about him. He's not going to be more conservative than them. But it's no different than social conservatism. Social conservatism is dead in the Republican Party, too. Immigration, national defense conservatism is dead, too. We don't have any conservatives. We have a Republican Party that's, hey, vote for us because the Democrats will be even more extreme at any given time. But then we're eventually going to go along with them anyway. It's our fault. I mean, we've allowed this betrayal to go on for two decades, accelerate, get worse every year, and we don't do anything in the primaries. We don't do anything to try to create a new party. And, you know, frankly, Sandy, a lot of our colleagues in this business have a lack of values, a lack of intuition, a lack of intellect. There's no foresight. There's no Buckley of this generation. Everyone is just out there to get on Fox News and have a soundbite and earn a living and sell their books, and that's it. And that's why we are where we are.
Well, let's zero our comments now on the majority leader in the Senate, because you and I both blame him tremendously for what's happening here. Let's talk about Mitch McConnell and his background on spending. Has he always been a big spender, Daniel?
He has always been a big spender, as you could tell from the Washington Post report, where he supposedly told the president nobody has ever lost power for spending too much money, which is not true. Republicans lost in 2006 to a large degree because of that issue. But the point is this. They're going to talk about the Democrats controlling the House. The reality is we had about 9 budget bills / debt ceiling leverage points for the first 2 years of this presidency when Republicans controlled all 3 organs of power. And every time McConnell immediately put out a budget giving the Democrats everything they wanted on spending. And that's what he wants to do now. He wants to give them a clean debt ceiling increase. Imagine if you have a busy road and instead of realizing that the problem is the traffic and you need to safely turn on that road, you say the problem is a stop sign. I'm just going to rip out the stop sign and go anyway. The problem is the debt limit, not the debt. That's McConnell's view. They're going to bust the budget caps. Now, you think, all right, we know they're not going to cut spending, but at least deal with the consummate issue of our time, open borders, and just the gangs and drugs and stealing of American sovereignty coming into our border. I'm sick of hearing of these children. Oh, the children. 22 children were arrested. Or the completion of an arrest that has been taking place over a year in L.A., 22 of the most violent MS-13 gang members, 19 of them were resettled as unaccompanied children. They came here illegally from Honduras and El Salvador over the past couple of years. Republicans are doing nothing about that. So my point is, at least if you're going to give the Democrats everything they want on spending, and we're going to spend ourselves into oblivion on everything they want to do, at least have spending for what is the quintessential federal job, as Madison said, to protect us from external danger, to at least fund ICE and Border Patrol, but no, nothing on that.
Yeah, I mean, and it's really true. I can, what Daniel is saying is absolutely true, and that's why you hear so much anger in my voice so often when it comes to Mitch McConnell. It really is stunning. His record is stunning. He's leading the Senate, and he's leading our country in his own way, resisting, I think, the president when the president wants to do good things, doing nothing to help him on immigration. And now with this budget fight coming up, doing some horrible things. And let me just double down on what you said in passing. The Washington Post reported that Mitch McConnell in the Oval Office convinced the president that no politician had ever lost office for spending more money. And so that was reported by an insider. I guess one leak I'm grateful for. Daniel, can you stay with me just a little longer?
Sure thing.
Okay, because what I'd like to do is come back and actually talk about the nuts and bolts of it. We've made some broad generalizations, but let's talk about this September spending bill and what's actually happening and if there's something that people can do about it. My guest is Daniel Horowitz. By the way, his article, McConnell Surrenders the Most Important Budget Fight of Trump's Presidency Before It Begins. That's the name of the article. We'll put it on our Facebook page, and we'll talk about it in just a second. So stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
O Timothy, guard what has been entrusted to you. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Jalene Hinkle is the top left defender in U.S. women's soccer, but she wasn't on the World Cup winning national team. The Irish Times published the headline, Religious Clash Leaves USA's Best Left Back an Observer of World Cup Bid. In 2017, Hinkle rejected the invitation to join the national team for a pair of exhibition matches after learning the players would wear rainbow-themed jerseys to celebrate Pride Month. Hinkle hasn't been a part of the national team since. She said, it's very disappointing, but the peace that comes from obeying God trumps the disappointment. She sacrificed the World Cup to follow Jesus.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
If you're a pastor or ministry leader, you and your spouse are invited to a free American Renewal Project event, August 8th and 9th at Liberty University in Lynchburg, Virginia. Speakers like Charlie Kirk of Turning Point USA, David Barton of Wall Builders, and Bishop E.W. Jackson will give encouragement and spiritual refreshment. The event will include Issachar training for pastors considering running for elected office. Space is limited. Please register by August 5th at lynchburgrenewal.eventbrite.com. Or call 800-921-1928.
The loss of a child through abortion, miscarriage, or stillbirth affects the emotional health of families. Feelings of anger, sadness, and regret can be overwhelming. There is hope and healing in the aftermath of a reproductive loss. Call the International Helpline at 866-482-LIFE to talk with someone who has been where you are and healed to help others. Your call is confidential. 866-482-LIFE.
Ryan Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. Nike put a Betsy Ross flag on a pair of shoes and the talking snake media went nuts, calling it a symbol of hate and comparing it to the swastika. What they didn't tell you was that Betsy Ross was an abolitionist, a staunch Quaker from Philadelphia who never owned a single slave ever. They didn't tell you the Betsy Ross flag was the first official flag of the United States of America. Nor did they tell you the flag was a symbol of unity, not slavery. The 13 stars in a circle represented the 13 new states that were part of one undivided nation. Nor did they tell you that many African Americans fought for the flag in the War for Independence, from Bunker Hill, the first battle of the war, all the way to Yorktown, the last battle. The Betsy Ross flag was their flag too, and it still is.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Yesterday, leading American and foreign officials and survivors of persecution addressed the U.S. Ministerial to Advance Religious Freedom. Each underscored, often movingly, the necessity of respecting that foundational liberty in the face of worldwide and often barbaric efforts to suppress it. Incredibly, that same event will provide today a platform for two individuals who embrace, practice, and work relentlessly to advance the supremacist Islamic doctrine called Sharia that animates an estimated 80% of such persecution. Predictably on this occasion, Sheikh Abdullah bin Baya and Imam Muhammad Majid will mouth the sorts of platitudes about peace, tolerance, and interfaith solidarity that have long been hallmarks of their Muslim Brotherhood influence operations in this country and that have secured for them speaking roles at the ministerial today. But such Sharia supremacists seek to deny religious freedom to everyone else. They must be thwarted, not promoted. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. Just another bulletin that's very important. This morning at 10 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, a judicial nominee will come before the Judiciary Committee in the Senate to be considered for the Fifth Circuit. His name is Judge Suleiman Ozerdan. Suleiman Ozerdan is a district judge for the Southern District of Mississippi, and the American Family Association is very concerned about him, at least our PAC, our 501c4 is. He has refused to protect Christians from being forced to follow the Obamacare contraceptive mandate, and he refused to hear the complaint of the Catholic Diocese of Biloxi, whose leaders said that the contraceptive mandate violated their religious liberty and the deeply held religious belief in the sanctity of human life. Now, the pushback on Ozadan from those that are pushing for him is that, oh, nobody's got a great record. My understanding is that he's made some bad decisions, and if at the very least, he's weak. Look, you see what's happening in the courts. We see every day these horrible decisions in the courts. The last thing we need is somebody's friend being nominated who's bad, has really undermined religious liberty on some of his decisions, and is at best just weak. And so that's my words. Now, AFA has some specific reasons, but we are asking you to call your senator this morning and tell them to vote no on Suleiman Ozadan. We'll put this alert on our Facebook page so that you can read it and have more details about it so that you find the words when you call your senator. But I'm asking you to do that, especially those of you from Mississippi, because we're just sounding the warning bell that we don't need him to represent certainly a state like Mississippi in the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. We need really good, solid jurists. And so Judge Suleiman Ozadan is not the kind of person we need in that Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. So Daniel Horowitz is my guest. And again, he is with the senior editor of Conservative Review, but judicial nominees is one of his many strengths. Do you have any comments on that before we go back to the budget, Daniel?
You know, this is a growing problem where we just say a Trump nominee generically and assume that every nominee is good. Now, look, there's no way the president or any president ever knows and understands the background of every district judicial nominee. He just can't, and he has to rely on people. And the problem is there's clearly people, sometimes they're problematic personnel in the White House, sometimes they are people in the Senate that have influence with him. It's from their home state. I'm not sure the exact case in this situation, but they promote people just because they're friends, and they're not really originalists. A lot of Trump's nominees are very good, better than I think a better track record than the last Republican president, but not all of them are. Not all of them are. We've seen a couple of bad decisions from some Trump appointees. Generally, they've been good. And this is the thing. There's no reason for this. There's just no reason everyone shouldn't be good when the Democrats are batting 1,000.
Yeah, no question about it. And my understanding is Ozadan is very close to someone that's close to the president. So I'll just leave it at that. And so we need all of you who are listening and trust the judgment of the American Family Association to call your senators. We'll put the alert again on our Facebook page and tell them to reject Ozadan. There's an article, by the way, in Political this morning that we'll put on our Facebook, too, just to give you some more information about Ozadan. All right, Daniel, let's talk about this. We've got, during the way that the system generally works, I guess they call it regular order, is that when these spending bills come up, funding various departments, I think there's 12 of them, the Congress can vote on them so that by the time September comes and the deadline for the budget has been reached, they actually have decided a lot of these areas. Well, they've not, I don't think they've passed many of these separate spending bills. But explain that, if you could.
Sure. Well, typically, there's 12 budget bills, and, you know, you pass one by one, the House passes, Senate passes, and then the president signs it. I mean, that process has broken down a long time ago. Sometimes, you know, one body, usually it's the House, because the majority kind of controls things lock, stock, and barrel. They pass a lot of them, but very few, if any, pass both and are signed by the president. And what winds up happening is they just pass a continuing resolution just to put everything on autopilot, often with some changes and anomalies when late September comes around in time for the October 1st deadline of the new fiscal year. The thing here that's very important for people to understand is this. Typically, we're the ones who have to change the status quo. If we want to cut spending, well, you have to identify spending cuts, and you have to successfully get the requisite numbers in both houses to agree with you, and that's like having pigs fly because nobody wants to cut spending there. The beauty about this opportunity is that because of the 2011 Budget Control Act, there's going to be automatic spending cuts simply by doing nothing. Simply by allowing the status quo, if you just pass the CR, don't do anything more, there will be spending cuts. It will be phased in at two points, some at in October 1st, the rest on January 1st, for a total of $124 billion in less discretionary spending than the current fiscal year. And that would be $124 billion, you know, out of $4 trillion in spending. It is common sense. It would merely take us back to the last year of Obama. Do you know that right now we are spending 18% more than in the final year of Obama? We are spending more than in 2009, which many believe was the worst recession since the Great Depression, where you have a lot of people out of work, a lot of welfare spending. And we are spending more money now. Now, I heard you play a clip at the top of the hour, someone talking about the fact that, oh, the tax cuts, you know, we have debt because of the tax cuts. Revenue, to be very clear, revenue is actually up slightly, 3% from last year. Revenue is up. That is not the issue. It's all spending. So Republicans could simply pocket spending cuts by doing nothing, yet there is unanimity of opinion among every Republican that matters, and now they've convinced the White House, evidently, to give the Democrats debt ceiling increase and raise the budget cap.
Now, Daniel, my understanding is that the president, at least his office, has pushed back asking for a short-term spending bill, a CR, that would only, I think, that would keep the spending the same for another year. Is that not the case?
Yeah, but remember, Sandy, the sleight of hand there. That is increasing spending, because meaning we are operating right now under a budget betrayal. That I was on your show last year talking about this, and that Trump said never again. I'm never going to sign something like this again.
Yep.
And he did again in February, and he did it again. So the point is that we are operating under the suspension of the budget caps. Come October 1st, by doing nothing, those caps come into place. What they're proposing is a CR that continues this year's levels, but that
okay.
would suspend the 2011 law.
Okay.
So it's a little
I
bit
see.
Of a trick there. They are yeah. increasing spending.
Yeah, let's go back. You know, I have loose my memory is that when the Republicans controlled both houses and Paul Ryan was Speaker of the House, at least once and probably more than once, Paul Ryan promised, especially once, that if President Trump signed this terrible, awful budget bill, which Paul Ryan had caved on everything, as he always did, he gave the Democrats everything they wanted, always raised spending, that Paul Ryan would make sure that the border was funded. He promised him he would make sure, just pass this bill, it won't. Then we won't have so much trouble, there won't be such, you know, dust-up political problems, so sign this bill, and then I promise you we'll give you money for your border wall. And then Paul Ryan was lying. He didn't do that. And I think that's been happening. Would you agree that these other bills that the president has signed have kind of been that same kind of thing, where he thought he was going to get something that he ended up not getting?
That and more. Often these bills had riders in them that made the border even worse. There was a whole MS-13 provision in the February budget bill that actually allowed illegals to affirmatively come forward and sponsor and traffic other illegals into the country, and as a reward for engaging in the criminal activity, they themselves get shielded from deportation. But yeah, you're right. The first 2 years, Trump had majorities in both houses, and they busted spending beyond the unconscionable levels of the Obama administration. And you would think, all right, if we're going to spend money on everything, at least have money for the border. No, and it's so bad now. Think about it, because we have so many illegals coming in, an unprecedented flow, so even the single adults that we supposedly can deport right away, we could deport anyone right away, but we follow these ridiculous court opinions, but the single adults, they're piling up so much at the McAllen station in Texas, but we don't have the funding in the planes to get them back. So it's not just because of the judicial amnesty, we don't even have the funding. And they're getting very belligerent and violent in those facilities now. That's a whole other problem. So this is a huge problem. And again, if you're going to cave on spending, which we knew they would anyway, at least get spending for the border.
Yeah, so, but McConnell, all right, let's zero in on McConnell. We just have a few minutes left. And I want to paint a very clear and accurate view of what Mitch McConnell is doing with his leadership from your perspective, Daniel. Instead of a broad sweeping, what is he doing and why is he doing it?
he's treading water. I mean, I'm just saying he wants to be majority leader. Why? So he could be majority leader. There's no affirmative goal. I mean, you look at AOC, you look at the Democrats, they wake up every day and they have a sense of mission. This guy doesn't. So the point is, what he'll just do is serve as the vanguard to block the most extreme current things the Democrats want to do. So here's how they move that Overton window to the left every day. Really, this is our time. This is our moment to go on offense on the border. But rather than doing that, the Democrats in the House wanted to pass a bill that would make it even harder to enforce immigration law. So McConnell looks like a hero that he's holding the line and is not going to allow the House bill to come to the Senate floor. But he's also not going to fight for, you know, better funding and better policies at the border. So we're just going to continue getting the status quo. Sandy, what's the status quo? The status quo is the following. The border numbers are three times worse than under Obama, and spending is 18% more than under Obama. How is that progress?
Well, I would but I think that I would also point out that Mitch McConnell is really not neutral when it comes to conservative policies. I mean, I agree with you that he's very ambitious, but he's also, when he gets mad, it's at conservative principles and conservative candidates. He reserves his vitriol and uses his big bank account as a political bank account to assault and harm and undermine conservative principles. He does. I mean, I've heard him speak.
Sandy, you don't need to put words in his mouth. He said nobody has ever lost office for spending too much money, and he said last year on health care that there has never been a difference between the two parties regarding mandating that insurance companies cover pre-existing conditions, which, as nice as that sounds, that is the core of Obamacare. That is what made it actuarially insolvent by destroying the entire healthcare system for a select few rather than dealing with it independently. That was the whole enchilada there. So he is telling us there is no difference.
Plus, we have to remind people that he promised when he was campaigning for Senate that they would repeal Obamacare root and branch. And he has never done the root.
I mean, that was the root of it.
Yeah, exactly. And so, and then he also talked about immigration, how they would, I forgot his words on this one, but on DACA, which was an arbitrary ruling by President Obama to give legal status to, 200,000 or so estimated illegal immigrant young people. And he promised he would fight that. We would get rid of that. And of course, he didn't do it. So I just want to paint an accurate picture of him. This man is a man who is not telling the truth. This man wields power. He's smart about the rules. But he is not a friend to conservatives, except when he's running for Senate. And by the way, he has a challenger this year, Daniel. I don't know much about him, but I know that he's got some challenge in Kentucky. So we'll see how that pans out. Meanwhile, is there in 30 seconds anything we can do about this budget?
Call your congressman and the Trump White House and demand that the Senate stay in session for the August recess. Cancel the August recess and start actually fulfilling your campaign promises. And I think that will build a lot of momentum and pressure the Democrats, because they certainly don't want to stay there in 100-degree weather all summer.
No, they don't. And neither do the... No. Okay. All right. Well, Daniel Horowitz, always a pleasure, even if the subject matter is dreadful. And we will put your article on our Facebook page and ask people to really call their senators and their congressmen, too, and tell them to hold the line, do their work, do their job, do a good budget, cut the budget, stop spending. I mean, it's pretty simple. All right, Daniel, thanks a lot. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.